Rest in peace, young ass. Born live on the set. Born live on the set. Yeah.
First off, say peace to Pine Ridge. Shame at all the damage that the white man wine did. Ghost dance, Pelletier's 5 million beers a year. And all that other crime.
Pay fiasco. Food and Liquor 2, the Great American Rap Album, Part 1, came out on this. It was born this day, night. Came out this day? That doesn't say here. But anyway, it's another day in history. I have to look that up, let y'all know what that was. But that's what we come through in our. It was released on this day, 2012. Okay. Once you get that out there. Before we jump into this very important conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information, www.mecu.com. And at steinershow.org is their banner, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. The other day, there was a 25-year-old man named Brandon Finney who has allegedly been used as a human shield in a gang shootout on the corner of Paca and Saratoga, waiting for his bus after he just finished his 3 to 11 shift as a surgical aide at the University of Maryland Hospital. It was allegedly a shootout between the Black Rilla family and a member of the Bloods. Two people have been arrested who were part of BGF. Allegedly part of BGF for the killing. But and as I read that and saw it, I mean, one of the first things that happened, Valerie, my wife, said, can you imagine the terror that Brandon Finney felt at that moment when he was on that corner and being grabbed as a shield and being gunned down in the midst of gunfire he couldn't control? And yesterday I had this deep conversation with a number of people about this, including Chauncey Whitehead, who is a man who comes on the show once a month to talk about physical fitness. It happened near where he lived. He lives not far from there on the other end of Packer Street, down closer to Liberty, where he helps people work out and gets a lot of people in our inner cities, young people in shape physically, and is committed to that. Chauncey said, you know, we look at this place, and one of the things that's happening up in this area around Lexington Market, it's a containment center. The police are containing people so they don't get down to Howard Street. They don't do much policing around things unless it's to bust somebody for vagrancy or for looking like they're nodding or for passing a packet or whatever that is that happens, but it's containment. On the other hand, we have this massive violence that affects thousands, I mean thousands and thousands of our young people in this community who are affected every day by this violence, just being part of it, witnessing it, feeling it, knowing it's around them. And what is our response? What should be our response beyond what we know is going to be a stepped-up police presence for the next month on Lexington Market, and then that will dissipate and go back to the Inner Harbor. So what do we do? And we joined three people here who have been longtime community activists in our studio to wrestle with this together with you at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. Mike Eugene Johnson is executive director of the Paul Robeson Institute for Social Change. Bobby Marvin Holmes, a former producer here at the Mark Steiner Show, is a filmmaker and co-producer of Live Young Blood and a youth development professional. Imhotep Fetu is with us, is co-founder and executive director of Urban Youth Initiative. Good to have the three of you with us.
Thank you for having us.
So I'd just like to ask for personal feelings for this quick moment. What you felt when that happened? You've been doing these 300-man marches. You've been on the street every day with young people who have been involved with the criminal justice system that you're kind of helping turn around and being a counselor and a mentor to people. You said before we went in the air that you looked at what happened to Brandon Finney, and you said, I am Brandon Finney.
Yes, yes, yes. First and foremost, I'd like to give my condolences to the family of Brandon Finney. Very tragic. And when I read the article, he is me in a sense. That was me years ago, working at Sinai Hospital, getting off from the 3 to 11 shift, on my way home, waiting on a bus stop or walking home. Working class family, working class neighborhood, just trying to do my best to make it and to take care of my family and looking towards upward mobility in Baltimore. It's very tragic, to say the very least. Very, very tragic. But one thing I often wrestle with, and I've been wrestling with the same thing with this Brandon, the death of Brandon Finney, is the men who shot him. I've heard words like cowards, you know, some would say monsters, and they are valid to the extent. But I think as a society, where we go wrong is we fail to realize they were once 15 years old, 14 years old, 13 years old. No one is born a monster. No one wakes up one day and be a homicidal maniac. These men were cultivated to be the way they are. It took time. And I have to entertain the argument. I have to think about the fact that where we caught these men 15 years ago, because they're only 25.
25 one or one 28. More 28.
Right. Where we caught them 15, 13 years ago when they were kids? Maybe that's where we went wrong. Not just went wrong with them shooting someone a couple of days ago, a couple of weeks ago, but we went wrong when they were first introduced to this violent culture. That's where we went wrong.
Imhotep, father you.
Yes, sir. Unlike most, I wasn't shocked by the situation that occurred, because that situation occurs every day. I think the problem is this ongoing analysis of Black America. I think Black America is under this microscope, so we're constantly analyzing Black America, but we're not analyzing the social matrix in which Black America is being cultivated. So the violence that's exemplified by young Black men, if we're going to talk about that violence, we have to link that violence to an historical violence that started with the founding of America. I think once we begin to look at the history and the relationship of American history with Black people, we can better understand what's taking place. Me personally, I walk around every day with a certain degree of anger inside of me. I'm angered and upset at the conditions that I see my people in. I'm angered and I'm upset at the way many other people misperceive Black people. I'm angered and I'm upset at the tragic state of the educational system. See, miseducation is violence. Poverty is violence. We only see violence one way, and that's when we think about gunshots, gun violence. But to deprive someone of the ability to do for self is a form of violence. Deprivation is violence. So we're going to talk about violence. We have to talk about the violence that have been perpetuated against Black America since Black people have been within America. And because of that, we are now beginning to see it morph into what we see today. And because it's morphing the way that it's morphing, we dislike that. So we have to talk about it comprehensively.
Michael, Eugene Johnson.
Well, you know, the first thing, to use somebody as a shield, the Black community has been a shield, unfortunately, for a lot of body blows in America. This is an act that has, as these two incredible young men have said, this is a repay. It's almost like an old vaudeville play. We should call it Pete and Repeat. These are things that repeat themselves, and depending on the degree of shock, we've become a shockless community. We've become a shockless nation. But we also have to look at the fact that when we're looking at violence, we have to look at violence, that violence starts nationally, internationally, that America is right now dealing with violence when it comes into the international issue. And that filters down to the violence that are being perpetrated in music, being perpetrated in video, being perpetrated in the media. And then it calls and just absorbs our community. So when we're saying that people were being used as shields, well, the Black community's been used as a shield for a pretty long time.
But let me push back a little bit on something both of you said, and come back to Bobby Marvin Holmes here. I mean, I hear that, and I understand that, and we talk about that all the time on this program. And the battle against racism in America, as you said the last hour when you talked about Eric Holder, that the conditions of race and racism in America have been heightened since the election of Barack Obama, which is probably a good thing, because it's put a thing on the table that needs to be on the table for people to start wrestling with. So, and that's in a larger sense that you have to also bring down to understanding of people throughout America, no matter what community they're in. But the question remains, Bobby, but what do we do here now to the lives of these three people, these four people, two dead, two in jail, that repeat themselves over and over again? Not always death, but the kind of violence and pain repeats itself over and over again. So while we need to kind of expand consciousness, understand the history of racism in America, the reason that 300 men march, even understand that, is something a little different.
Yeah, I would say what do we do now is definitely take a visit to Gay Street and go to the Juvenile Detention Center. Because the young men and women that we see walking out of those doors on a daily basis, chances are, odds are, they'll be walking out of those same doors, except for they'll be on Eager Street, come 10, 15 years from now. And we have to think critically about that. That how do we attack this at the root? One thing that a fellow mentor and someone I definitely look up to, Cameron Miles, said to me when Carter Scott was killed, the one-year-old and Charlie Hill, he said, we got to get them while they're young. We have to get them while they're young. And that's what I believe we need to focus on. We need to get serious about how to engage our youth and identify the troubled youth, the youth that are showing challenges in our neighborhoods, and figure out how can we as a collective work with that youth.
So I mean that you know, I hearken back, and I hate to sound like old man before I open the phones, but let me sound like old man just for a minute. I mean, I remember when some of this came to the fore in the late 60s and early 70s, and that organizations that took place in the inner cities of America, like the Black Panthers and others, kind of raised the consciousness, as you were talking about, Imhotep, about what was going on at that moment. But at the same time, it wasn't leaving it there. Analysis is powerful, but it was direct intervention into lives of people in the community, whether it was feeding young people, intervening the lives of gangs and drug dealers and trying to put a stop to that in the community and controlling the community itself. And I think about the programs that existed in the early 70s were actually funded. That what, like Bobby Marvin Holmes in some ways is working on those programs now, but not funded to the way it used to be funded in America by the federal government. Like what I give as a quick example and get you all to kind of comment about this, because we do have to intervene, it seems, because we're talking about people's lives here. I mean, while you're trying to change America and while you're trying to end racism, people are dying and people are being affected by the violence. And I worked in a program, several programs, one of them I'll highlight. Eddie Harrison ran this program. He was a man who was on death row. Got Nixon pardoned him after he wrote a book about his experience called No Time for Dying, and was released into back into society. Went back and got a college degree. Started this thing called pretrial intervention with money from the Department of Justice. Then we're all wary of the money, but money from the Department of Justice. So like people that you might be working with right now, Bobby Marvin Holmes, came to us for 3 to 6 months of intensive work. Individual counseling, group counseling, family counseling, getting them ready for work, not job training, but training them how to even survive on a job, and either helping them with their GED or doing tutoring to help them get their high school diploma. One of the two. There were men, young men and women who came to us. Intensive work. I mean, that seems to me the kind of intervention we have to start talking about now if we want to talk about at least having a dent in putting something to prevent some of this from happening. It's not going to change at all until we change the nature of society, but what I'm saying to you, I guess, Imhotep, it's important to understand the violence that created what's going on, but something's got to happen to not let these young people just die and become killers.
I would say this, and I agree 100%, and I believe that's why we have the Urban Youth Initiative Project, which is a youth organization. But I'm going to use a metaphor. One doesn't send a heart surgeon into an operating room to perform brain surgery unless the heart surgeon is also a brain surgeon. If he's not a brain surgeon, you don't send him in there. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of black people in America that want to do good in their communities with programs, but the program cannot be as effective if the program is not funded. And most black people still have to pay all these bills. So a dilemma still arises. And that dilemma is, how can I do this thing and get the funding? Now, so you start these nonprofit organizations and trying to receive funding, it's all this red tape that prevents you from getting funding. So the issue in the nutshell is resources. So that's why I said earlier on, I said deprivation is violence. So we got to address the issue of depriving these communities of the resources to do for themselves, because most communities are equipped and are ready to do something. See, black people are not just laying around not saying that we don't care. Black people do care. But at the same time, we live inside a capitalistic society where the bill man doesn't stop knocking on your door. BG&E don't care about us dying. So they're trying to figure out, well, I still got to take these things right here because the local government is not trying to put no money out there and aid us to build our programs. The Urban Youth Initiative Project, everything we do there is done out of pocket. It's done out of pocket. I've been doing that since 2006. No one is trying to give you anything to help black children. So that's the reason why I said that we also have to look at the causes, because if we keep on making it seem like that there is not a cause and that these children are the problem, we're going to always go wrong. So we have to do something today, but at the same time, we have to address the larger issue, because many people are standing by watching these black children die.
Wow. Well, I mean, absolutely. I think that we have a tendency too many times to think that, A, that we still have the same community that you and I grew up, Mark, in the 60s and 70s. It's not happening. Gentrification has came in and squeezed the community. Even the degree of desegregation has created other issues even within our communities, because there was a give and take, because we knew each other. We had to go to the same high schools we went to. So when I grew up and you and we grew up, and there were 10 high schools in Baltimore, and now there are 27 high schools in Baltimore, but yet the education hasn't exceeded more. So what we, and I think that the young man has said very clearly, that if we don't start handling the young people very, very, very young, and stop this miseducation of not only the African-American children, but the Hispanic children and all of the other children going to the public schools, this is going to be a repeat. Because the problem that we have here is that people are trying to be elected. People are not trying to do.
That's right. And I agree with both gentlemen. But what I also say is that more of our community members need to develop a sense of responsibility. They need to be accountable for what's happening in their communities as well. Because these children, when they go out in the streets, they came from homes of dysfunction. That's facts. And we can't look over that. You know, I go inside these communities, I go inside these homes, I work with these families. They're, the fathers, in some cases, father's not present. And also, the mother has inadequate parenting skills. So if you allow your children to do certain things, and you allow them, and kids will be kids. Like I said, they're not diabolical, not demons. Kids will be kids. Doesn't matter where you are, whether you're in Park Heights or Owens Mills, kids will be kids. But what's available in Park Heights may not be available in Owens Mills, and vice versa. Opportunity in Owens Mills may not be opportunity in Park Heights. So you're going to go with what's available. But guess what? That mom still wants opportunity. She still wants the best for the child. May not know how to provide what's best for a child. So it's some fundamental issues that we have to address and have to look at. And yes, it is a call for men to stand up and take responsibility. Just like me, just like Imhotep, just like Brother Michael, you have men who are stepping up in the community. Yes, but there are need of more. Since I've been studying this and doing this work, one thing I find is not a lack thereof men who don't want to do anything. It's not like the community is throwing up their hands and say, well, you know, it is what it is. No, there are men. We just need more men and women on the front lines ready to do this work. With the 300 Men March, when we do our street engagement, people look at us like, wow, we're Martians, like Superman. The Justice League came out of nowhere and say, hey, we're going to save Baltimore. No, we're just average, everyday working citizens who took responsibility. We have jobs, we have wives, we have families. Some of us are in jeopardy of getting our lights turned off. Some of us are in jeopardy of getting evicted. But yet and still, we make a commitment to address the issue of violence in our communities. We don't have excuses. We make commitments. And I think that is also what's lacking, is men not taking responsibility. Women aren't taking responsibility. So, and that's what we're lacking.
I'm going to open the phone to ask a question about what you think should be the response of the community, what should be the response of the police, what should be the response of our city government, what should be our response collectively. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Please join us with your ideas. We want to hear your thoughts with our three panelists. And Brother DeMond, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Peace and blessings, family. And Mark, you know, as avid listener of your show, I continue to, you know, I congratulate you on bringing people onto the show to talk about issues that a lot of individuals during the daytime hour will not talk about. Now, I just wanted to share that from what I've been hearing, as Brother Munir mentioned, it's not the the lack of those who are willing to go among the people, into the communities, into the households, and even, you know, share the burden that the community that they may not live in themselves. However, I think the issue is the analysis of when we use the word we. Because when we consider how we use the word we, as in we need to solve the problem, a lot of times those who are not interested, other than having interest at the bottom line when it comes to business or land development or material gain, they're not going to be necessarily involved or concerned with the backroom issues that the families are dealing with. And I think that's what I'm hearing. But I put it out there by saying we necessarily cannot, as the brother mentioned, I'm not sure who he was, but he mentioned the red tape when it comes to gaining resources or funding for such programs. Because we know that if a program is going to be effective, it has to be unconditional, or rather, it has to be, you know, in a way that not as programs have been in the past, so in order for it to be effective. My point in sharing that is a lot of times we're restricted based upon our programming, you know, agenda or our action items. So therefore, a lot of funding sources aren't readily available or accessible to those such programs. I think when we consider the word we, going back to that, it's going to be our collective organizing, those who are, you know, primarily affected, because looking for funding from others who aren't necessarily affected, we will continue to be in this situation. And lastly, yes, though we're going into the communities, and I think that continues, the need to continue to take place, whether whatever organization is doing such, and of course 300 Men March are effective, and they're doing great works in Northeast Baltimore. However, I just ask that we also look at this as a programmatic, or rather a system-wide, you know, approach, because getting in the streets is one method, but there are many more layers from education, or as it has been said, from dealing with the social issues within the family that has been said. So I just wanted to share and just make known that I applaud the brothers in their work, and of course, you know, encourage them to continue on. And you know, I just look forward to greater days in Baltimore as a citizen as well as an advocate as well.
Thank you, brother. Brother Damon, join us here at 410-319-8888. We want to hear your thoughts. I want people to explore this notion of when he raised the notion of we. So what we means, who is the we? Many people argue that people have to step up. Can the black community do this on its own? And what does that mean? What is the police response? What should it be? When people talk about funding, Imhotep Fatiu mentioned the question of funding. This is an issue leaders of black struggle have been raising over the question of who gets the funding and why do they get the funding? And what happens to the kind of stuff that's in these intervention programs that can turn around young lives, doesn't change the nature of capitalist exploitation, doesn't change the nature of racism and poverty in America, but you have to do something to save people's lives and build a new world at the same time. It's a very complex question. We'll read a little bit of Elijah Anderson when we come back. We're going to go to break with KRS-One, Stop the Violence. Stay with us.
1, 2, 3, the crew is called BDP. And if you want to go to the tip top, stop the violence in hip-hop, why, yo? Time and time again, as I pick up the pen, as my thoughts emerge, these are those words. I glance at the paper to know what's going on. Someone's doing wrong, the story goes on. Mary Lou just had a baby, someone else decapitated. The drama of the world shouldn't keep us so frustrated. I look, but it doesn't coincide with my book.
I'd like to see us open the lines of communication, prioritizing and dealing with self-preservation. Being constructive is something I'm completely endorsing, because the mind state of the youth kind of needed some reinforcement.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Hip-hop.
hip-hop's responsibility goes far beyond rapping. We can talk about the clap and sing songs without action. Activists, activism must enforce your lyricism. This is how you counteract violence and lying politics.
Cut-throat Americana, powder cake, California, big business, crucial, and hip-hop is how to warn you. Black and brown, brown.
Busta Rhymes and Wise Intelligent, KRS-One's Self-Construction. We are here with Imhotep Fatiu, who is co-founder and executive director of Urban Youth Initiative. And during the break was telling us his own tale of where he came from, which he's done before in this program, which is really important. Bobby Marvin Holmes, filmmaker, co-producer of Live Young Blood and a youth development professional. Mark Eugene Johnson, executive director of the Paul Robeson Institute for Social Change. And you at 410-319-8888. Let's go right to the phones first, and we'll leap right into this. Edwards in Baltimore City, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark, good morning. How are you?
Very well. Good morning.
Yeah, you were talking about what can we do about the violence here in Baltimore, right?
Yes, go ahead.
Mark, the problem is out here. I'm an evangelist also. I'm out here talking to a lot of young people from time to time. And Mark, if these kids can get work to do and keep their mind productive, doing something, we won't have all this violence. Because, you know, talking to these kids out here, some of them tell me, they can't work, and they go sell drugs, and they better off be in prison getting 3 meals a day and don't have to do nothing. So you can see where their mind is, their lack of education, and they really, really need help. And they have to learn these things from other people. They didn't born with that. And if we caught these people at an early age, we can change it. It might not be in 5 or 10 years, but it might be 25 years. And we can change the situation and make it better. Because the way it looks out here right now to me, as an evangelist and going on and talking to a lot of black young people, we are going further and further into the hole. The Spanish guys and the Spanish people and them, they're doing better in school more than the blacks. Because many blacks drop out of school, you go into the mall. They're walking up and down into the mall when they should be in school.
Okay.
And I ask myself, what happened to their father and their mother?
Well, let me let the panel come back in here, and let me turn first to Bobby Marvin Holmes and go around the room.
I think we have to get some things straight when it comes to our youth, and I think we have to be practical and realistic and really do our homework. Not every youth in Baltimore City plays basketball. It's a fact. Not every youth in Baltimore City plays football. So we can't always say, well, they don't have anything to do. Yes, we need rec centers. We need more sports programs. Not every youth in Baltimore City, ride dirt bikes. You know, it's just the reality of it. And just when we say, well, youth need jobs, we have to be practical and realistic. We have labor laws. A 14-year-old, 15-year-old, 16-year-old can only work up so many amount of hours during the week. We have child labor laws. And a child shouldn't have to work full time to provide. There's the parent's responsibility. And that's if the parent is capable of doing so. We have to be practical when we talk about what is happening with our youth and be realistic on what can be done. Because we can't hand out 48-hour jobs, especially when my 16-year-olds that I work with are competing against 25-year-olds, 28-year-olds for the same job. And guess what? I told my youth, they're going to choose the 25-year-old or 28-year-old. Why? Because they don't have to worry about child labor laws. Why? Because they know that person can work 8 to 4. You can't. You have to go to school. So we got to be practical and realistic when we talk about what resources we provide for our youth.
And Imhotep, one of the things you said during break, I think is important. I want to add these two things in, and I'm going to add several things to what you were saying. I mean, you were talking about in its essence, and you can describe it for a minute here before we go back to the phones. That it's a cultural consciousness that has to be, and political awareness that has to be raised. And I'll add to that, I think there has to be a therapeutic modality with that to help these young people who are really in deep pain to come through where they are, to see another place, also internally, not just from the social consciousness, but the internal consciousness, I mean, as well. And some people, okay, I'll stop there. Go ahead, Imhotep.
Yes. it has to be a social, political consciousness, rebirth of consciousness, but that's naturally going to be born with the knowledge of self. The knowledge of self is going to come from the culture. So I use myself, and I like to use my story, not to glorify my story, because my story is not something to be glorified, but it's a reality. I come from Park Heights, and I've done all the things that these young guys are doing. I carry a 45 on my spine because I was shot. I was paralyzed. I spent 13 years and 9 months in prison, so I've done it all. But what changed me and what set me right, it wasn't prison, because prison is designed to stomp your humanity out. It was not prison. It was the knowledge that I found inside a book while I was in prison. As once I began to read, the reading began to open me up. It allowed me to connect my Africanness with something great. So once I was able to connect with something bigger than myself, I realized that I was better. Because most of the time, self-destruction of others is a manifestation of the way I see myself. See, if I have no value for the life extended beyond me, it's because I don't value my life. You know, disrespect is a reflection of a lack of self-respect. So any type of violence that we see that we're trying to make some sense of, we got to understand what's taking place with the child. So, but at the same time, we got to also link that violence with something that's larger. And so we really want to help our children, because that's what we're talking about. And I do agree that all of them don't play basketball, football, ride dirt bikes, and things like that. But the one thing that I believe all children, all human beings share in common is all of us, at the core, we are decent beings. At the core, we are decent. But somewhere the decency isn't allowed to manifest, because decency has to be cultivated. See, and that cultivation comes from a structured type of system. So if you don't have a structured type of system, your decency is going to be suppressed. So that oftentimes, that's what's happened inside some of our communities. The decency of us is suppressed. And when that decency is suppressed, it morphs in a perverted way. And that's what we're really seeing. We're seeing people unable to communicate to resolve conflict. That's what we're dealing with. So that's an indication of underdevelopment, my inability to use my mind and my words to resolve an issue. So therefore, I'm going to resort to this form of a social interaction that I know that works best for me, but might not necessarily be best for the context that I live within.
And I think what you're saying is very powerfully important, because one of the things that we don't that I think happens to our kids, and it's the miseducation of our children in many ways.
Absolutely, right.
Is we do our children in many ways are not, poor working class kids, especially I'm talking about here, are not taught to think deeply,
right,
and go under stuff, which is why when you work with kids, oftentimes you ask them something, you know this, Bobby, because you do it every day as well, is it'll be like a one word or one sentence answer.
Yes.
No, right? I'm all right, cool,
right,
okay.
With no, right, right, because we've done that, and that has to be changed. I mean, there's something deeper inside them that's got to help, you got to bring that out to make it work. What were we going to say?
Well, it's important. It's like the brother's saying, if you don't know where you come from, you're not going to know where you're going. And so if you have got a group of young people who the only image they see is that particular image that's a negative image in our community. And it's interesting that we have this conversation, because I as well grew up in Park Heights. And just the slight generational gap between me and this young man.
Slight.
Generation between me and this young man. The thing about it is that what created my 10 brothers and sisters, and what gave us, not that I didn't have any brothers that was out there as well, but what made the difference was it was the constant way that you and other people that we looked up to that said, you know, you come from greatness. And so if you don't give a child an opportunity to understand that you don't come from anything but greatness, we're miseducating our kids. And so we can sit here and can talk for days about what's wrong now, but if we don't do a Marshall Plan with these young children and don't start getting these young children to understand that you come from greatness,
right,
that you come from kings and queens and doctors and lawyers, because generations ago, we couldn't say we came from presidents and senators and congressmen and governors and mayors. But now we can say that too.
Bobby, I'm going to get to Tina. Hold on, we're going to come to your call right now. But Bobby, say what you have to say, then we'll go right to Tina.
I agree with these, man. When you don't have that responsible adult in your life, got to emphasize responsible adult, not the 25-year-old that's going to encourage you to sell drugs or smoke weed, and that's your role model. If that's your only role model, then yeah, that's what you're going to do. You're going to act accordingly. But if you don't have anyone to challenge you to critically think, challenging you to read, challenge you to be better, and also lifting and encouraging your self-esteem, that's what you're going to get. Like the kid, like I said, the kid in Park Heights is no different than the kid in Owens Mills. Kids need validation. They need to be affirmed. Every kid, black or white, mm-hmm. they need to be affirmed. And this kid that lives in Park Heights, he's not being affirmed. He's only being affirmed when he's doing something wrong. Oh, yeah, sure, you beat him up. That's how you do it. Yeah, sure, you took that drink. Yeah, that's how you do it. When you're being affirmed, when you're doing something wrong, and that's how you can being socialized, that's what you will perpetuate. That's what would you continue. Why? Because that's what you know. And you had doubts doing this. You had doubts. We're quick to say, well, it's the music and there's the movies. I grew up with violent video games and movies and a whole trove of generations did the same thing. We're now out here killing people. Yes, the music say it's all right for you to do it, but guess what? He has 25-year-olds and 18-year-olds living down the street from him now doing the A-Sizzy every day. Rick Ross doesn't have that influence, more so influence than that 25-year-old and 18-year-old that's down the block from him.
Right.
And we can say poverty. Yes, poverty is violent. I agree with Brother Imhotep. It is violent. It is harsh. But one thing we got to say that I have to teach and definitely drill through my boys, don't measure, use money to measure your self-worth. Because we get this idea, people are poor, so they mean they're going to commit crimes, they're going to rob and steal, and they're going to kill. And that's not the reality. And that's not what's going on all the time in all cases. Because when we attach money to our self-worth and we feel like, well, I don't have this new pair of shoes, well, I don't have this car, well, I don't have these clothes, and I mean nothing. And I'm constantly battling with my boys about this. Just because you live here, just because you have to wear this, just because you have these shoes on, doesn't mean you have no value. We have to teach our boys that money is not their worth. They shouldn't be measured by materialistic things. That's what we miss. So
at the same time, I think we have to still separate difference between money and poverty. There is a difference. And so I understand. I agree with what you're saying. But poverty is real.
I'm not denying
being hungry,
pay real.
Being
around pill. Yeah. But with the youth, I often see they confuse the two of, well, I don't have money, so therefore I'm nothing.
I think that what they confuse is the difference between a good diet, a good regimen of food, a good regimen of education is poverty. Style, dress, and stuff like that is money. So I agree with you, what you're saying. I just think that there's a different lane that we need to go in on that. That's all.
Same thing. And when that 15-year-old hit the streets, he's hitting the streets. And in some cases, not all, in some cases, he want the new pair of J's. He want the new pair of Jordans.
Yeah.
Not because he's in the house eating mayonnaise sandwiches. Well, it's because his mother can't afford their pair of shoes. She could get him a pair of shoes, mm-hmm. but it won't be the pair of shoes he wants. It's not.
Well, you
got
to have a grocery store in our community, too, to have eat mayonnaise sandwiches. But that's another conversation.
Right. Or well, more than mayonnaise sandwiches. 410-319-8888. Tina, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Welcome to the show.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. All I'm saying is that, well, I didn't even say anything, but anyway.
We heard you.
You know, we always have poor people. We've always had issues. And so the thing is, if we don't have these problems of these programs, then what do we do? And I think we really need to hold the church and the community, the neighborhood associations, accountable to assist in helping with the programs in the community. There's a young man by the name of Charles Blaney at Walbrook and Monroe, and he has movie nights, mm-hmm. and they use their own money. He and his wife use their own money right at the corner of Walbrook and Monroe, have movie night for the kids. So I'm just saying, along with encouraging the kids and everything, we really need to have men, even the Nation of Islam or anyone, your brother, the brothers that's on, to really connect with the neighborhood associations, connect with the churches, and really push them and, you know, discuss the issues that we face, which they already know, and have them to become more involved in the neighborhood and not be so reaching out so much to federal and state government to do it, and locally, because they already burdened with enough stuff. That's all.
Thank you, Tina, so much for your call. And let me just say, people calling in, and someone got upset because the producers asked them what they wanted to say, because that's what we always do. Most of the shows do here. You just, all I want to say, so we can see what's coming up next. It's not to say you can't say what you want to say. It's so we can understand what you want to say. So please call back. And when she asks you what it was, it's not to screen you out. It's to screen you in, so we understand what's going on before we get you on the air. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join this conversation. We'll come back to the phones in just a minute. But you know, and I think that there are sometimes can be limits to individual engagement through all of this, just because of the nature of people's lives and people mm-hmm. are busy. I'm thinking of a woman who we covered a lot on this program, Nargis Hyman, in Park Heights,
yeah.
who opened for 13 years. Her basement was wall-to-wall young people that she brought in to keep them off the streets, yeah. and mm-hmm. boys and girls, mm-hmm. to help them get through, and got them through college and into nursing school and taught them medical terms and taught them language and had these computers secondhand that they put back together so the kids can do their research. And I mean, it takes that. But then she had to stop after 13 years working full-time as a nurse because she just couldn't do it every day all the time.
Right.
And it's more than just individual effort. It has to be a societal effort. Mm-hmm. It has to be a it has to be a response beyond that. That's one of the things I wanted to comment on. And so what do we think? So right now, what should the mayor's response be? What should Batz's response be?
The mayor's response should be this right here. You got the brothers that's doing the 300 march.
Yeah.
I think that's very creative, and I think it's innovative, and that right there need to be on an agenda. Safe streets works.
Absolutely. Yes.
I work for Safe Streets. I worked for Safe Streets when it was in East Baltimore.
Right.
I was an outreach worker
right.
in 2008 in East Baltimore. It's very effective. Right. Now I'm the supervisor of Safe Streets and Park Heights. It's very effective. Yep. Safe Streets model is a very simple model. We utilize brothers and sisters who come out of that mud, who have changed themselves around
right.
to go back into that mud.
So important.
To mediate conflict.
So important.
And it works because you are taking individuals who have the credibility to get up close and personal with these individuals likely to be perpetrators or victims of shootings to mediate the conflict. So Safe Streets should be something that the mayor should be thinking about right now, because when you look at the data, which John Hopkins have been doing since Safe Streets been in Baltimore since 2007, the data is clear and it shows that wherever you place a Safe Streets site, that the shootings goes down.
Amen.
Wherever you put it at. And for the mayor to sit back and not think about trying to figure out how to get Safe Streets on the agenda and how to get Safe Streets in her yearly budget so we can get more Safe Street sites, in my opinion, it's negligence.
And I think that you know, and I would be one of those, and I've talked to Commissioner Batz about this, and I said it to Mayor as well, maybe some of the police budget, because it's public safety,
yes.
should be invested in Safe Streets with people who are on the street and not just patrolling the streets in their cars. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do need police. You got to stop. I mean, the guys had to be stopped from doing the crime they're doing. That's yes. Mm. But the intervention on the street, creating that counseling right there on the spot on the corner,
mm-hmm.
is like so important. It could stop a lot and help young people
yes.
that could be then turned over to the Bobby Marvin Holmeses of the world to work with and counsel to a new way of thinking. You know, these kind of things could work together in a really important way if we designed that plan.
Well, I think that one of the questions that you asked a few minutes ago goes back to what these two gentlemen and other people are saying. We have a lot of groups out here. We have a lot of programs out here. The issue is all of these groups aren't necessarily talking. And so if I'm looking for something from the mayor's office, I'm looking for the mayor's office to give us the ability to call all of the groups in that are assisting the city, assisting the communities, doing all of the great work and all of the work. But there are also a lot of people that are out here that are getting 501c3s and getting financial help and getting fiscal help. It's not doing jack. But yet they're being honored and funded and things like that. And
that
so if there's a no checks and balances
that's true.
Of so, what's going on, we need to make sure that we can put together all of these groups, or someone needs to make a call for all of these groups to come together so we can share our roles and share our responsibility. This is holistic. This is about our village. This is about our tribes.
Let me see how many. Okay, Bob, I'll do a couple of calls. I'm going to get some callers in here before we've got 10 minutes left. But let me go ahead, then I'm going to jump in and get calls in here.
I think, really, I'm personally not going to wait for the city government to get involved and to lend support. They lend support in ways they do, and when they don't, they don't. I take responsibility for my community first and foremost. If I don't do something, I don't point to anyone else. I point to me. But I have a boy who lives in Imhotep's neighborhood. It's incumbent upon me to say, hey, here's where he lives. Here's what he looks like. Look out for him while he's out there. it's up to me to network with other community organizations, other programs. Say, here's what's going on in Bel Air Edison. What's going over there in Park Heights? It's nothing but a matter of phone call and a matter of reaching out. Facebook has made the world a lot smaller, so it's very easy to find out who's doing what. So it's incumbent upon us to reach out to one another and build partnerships and relationships.
Let me go to the phones here, but maybe what the city needs is like a Congress of Community Action of people actually doing the work who gather together and say, coordinate this, who we are, and also demand change on the government level while they begin to coordinate, work together, and pull people together to talk to each other. You know, mm-hmm. So the Imhoteps and the Bobby Marvin Holmes of the world are connected in the work that they do.
But also expose the ones that aren't doing the work. There are a lot of people. Yeah, but also expose the ones that are not doing the work.
So I agree. 410-319-8888. Quick thoughts here from our listeners that have just called in. Melvin, Windsor Mill, you're on the air.
Yes. I think that basically the government, we need to focus on the government in terms of the wages. Minimum wage doesn't qualify you to live anywhere. You can't put that number on an application to get an apartment or anything. It's just below the substandard. And as long as we keep allowing the government to keep feeding us this wage that's not conducive to doing anything, we'll never be able to pull out of this. And I was speaking to someone, and they said, well, you know, you got to get a hustle. But what's a hustle? Selling drugs? What is that? You know, and you can't put a hustle, you can't put money from a hustle on an application in order for you to qualify and have somewhere to live. So that's where it starts. And the government is really fueling all of this, what's going on, the poverty. For me, that's where it starts. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Melvin. Let's go to another quick call, then we'll have a final thought from our guests here. 410-319-8888. Delanda on the east side, you're on the air.
I'm quite an observer, and I tend to analyze things. Over a period of my life, I'm 51. Over a period of my life, I got to see the young black boys and girls and men and women, you know, run to the hustle of white America, the Caucasian, drugs. And for a period of 20 years or more, nothing but black people died because of the inappropriate ways that drugs were solicited.
Then we're almost out of time, so I just want to let you wrap up your thoughts so we can have our guests have a finished closing thought.
I got to see so many, you know, fall by the wayside because...
I appreciate the call. Thank you so much for being part of this. Let me get you, the three of you, to kind of close this out. We have literally like 5 minutes left in this particular thing and about where we go from here and your thoughts about where we think we go from here. Imhotep, why don't you start off and we'll go around the room.
I think where we need to go from here, first and foremost, is the black community. I'm a big advocate that we must do for self. I'm a big advocate we must do for self. But I don't believe that we should constantly focus all the energy on ourselves as if this problem originated with us. I think that is a mistake. I think we need to look at where this problem really originated at and understand that it has its origin and understand that what we see within the black community is symptomatic. And if we're really going to address it to the degree that we're going to reduce it, we have to address it holistically. Everything ties together. Education, family, social, violence, it's all linked together. Diet, everything. So we need to be able to address it holistically. We need to talk about the lack of education that our children are receiving and figure out how we can get them proper education, because education is therapeutic. If they get proper education, their minds are going to develop correctly, if the mind developed correctly, they are enabled to handle situations differently, because most of the violence comes from something that's real minor, but my inability to resolve this thing is minor. It becomes explosive because I don't know how to handle it. So we can give our children the education which would allow them to become fully developed human beings. Most of the violence that we see manifested within our communities, we can begin to see it subside.
Bobby Marvin Holmes.
I try to be solution-oriented. So, you know, for listeners who are wondering, what can I do to help? What can I do to get involved? If you are a part of a church, I encourage you to talk to your pastor. I encourage you to talk to the pastor and have a serious discussion about starting a mentoring group at your church, particularly for that, wherever the church is located, for particularly for that neighborhood, particularly for that block. We can't save the world in one day. Particularly for that neighborhood, that block, start a youth ministry, a mentoring group that's a part of the church, and have that program. If you're not a part of a church, reach out to your community association and see what you could do. As far as if you're not the type, I can't work one-on-one with youth, okay, if I could cook lunch for the boys, if I could give money to this community association to help with this mentoring program. If you don't want to go the community association route, reach out to MOTEP. Reach out to Brother Michael, and figure out how you could get involved with their programs, which I'm sure their boys, their kids need lunches. I'm sure they need some type of financial contribution. Or reach out to 300 Men March. Our website is 300menmarch.com. There is something everyone can do right now. I just gave a bunch of ideas. It's don't wait for anyone else to say, well, I'm going to start something. If you know the young ladies that are in that community are unruly, take three of them and you start your own mentoring group. It doesn't take Superman. It doesn't take rocket scientists to take initiative and to care. Doesn't mean you don't have to be from the streets to say, I want to save a youth.
Michael, we have just a couple minutes left here.
Sure, sure. You know, one of the things I want to do, I want to applaud these two young men and many men that are in our communities doing the best they can on the very small financial support or support. And I still believe that the miseducation of especially African-American children in a formative years, in the early years, is the result of where we get. They are cowards in our community. They are bad people within our community. But to suggest that this is just a black issue is incorrect. This is a society. This is a human issue. We must, at the end of the day, realize that if we don't get all of the organizations together to start working for one common goal, that we will have the same conversation next year. We will talk about another critical situation next year. And we will sit here and expect people to do for us what we can do for ourselves.
I want to thank all three for being here. Michael Eugene Johnson, Executive Director of the Paul Robeson Institute for Social Change, Bobby Marvin Holmes, filmmaker, co-producer of Live Youngblood, youth development professional, former producer for The Mark Steiner Show, Imhotep Fatiu, who is co-founder and Executive Director of the Urban Youth Initiative. Thank the three of you so much for being here.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
On the way out of here, I have to announce that the Chessie Jam Children's Music Festival comes to Baltimore, Pier 6 Pavilion, on Saturday, October the 4th, noon to 6. Biz Markie, Milkshake, Justin Roberts, Recess Monkey, Father Goose, and more, plus music, games, activities, and food. More information at chessiejam.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineer is Andrea Melton. Our intern is Sianna Graves. To hear the show again, podcast, any of our past shows, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. You can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes on your favorite podcast app. And for Public Radio WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. It's everywhere I look. Used to be a straight A student. Now he's a crook, robbing people just to smoke and shoot up. Used to have a crew cut, now he's a poop butt. Dropped out of school and he joins the neighborhood gang. Hanging on the street selling cane to his own people. Now when I say people, I mean color. You a stupid motherfucker. Sister, since we are the mothers of this earth, it's time we start being good mothers from the birth of our children. No time for sleeping. Teach